New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. Welcome to the Integrative Hermetic Health Show. My name is Johnny Bluestar. I help Dr. Rodier, the founder and host of this show, to produce a program with a relatively rare and important mission. In this program, we actually let our audience, our lay audience mostly, take a peek and sometimes take a profound look at the latest research on nutrition from top medical articles in the world. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Johnny.
What do you have in store for us today? What are we going to discuss?
Well, I'd like to start with a question. What, in your impression, your opinion, is the number one cause for a patient to go see a doctor, or the number one complaint that a patient brings to a doctor in the United States? What would you guess?
Why aren't I getting better? I'm just getting sick from taking all these pharmaceuticals.
Okay, fair enough. But put yourself in the position of regular American out there. What is he he's not on any drug yet. Okay. What's the number one reason he might want to go to the doctor?
Well, I'll tell you for myself, at certain points in my life, I was really tired.
And, there you go.
And even now, I'm thinking I'm napping a little bit too much.
Okay, well, there you go. That is the answer. That is the number one reason Americans go to the doctor is fatigue. And number two, unfortunately, these things get mixed up in the mind of a doctor and a patient. What is the number two?
Stomach problems?
Depression.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay. After that, stomach issues, headaches. But let's talk about fatigue for a little bit. It's just so unfortunate that most people that go to the doctor for fatigue are deemed and diagnosed to be depressed. So they get an antidepressant. The few that might get a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, which incidentally it has been changed, the name has, to systemic exertion intolerance disease, myalgic encephalomyelitis.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. Well, the name itself should tell you we got a problem, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
What would such a name imply to you? What does it hint of, such a long name? I'll say it again. Systemic exertion intolerance disease or myalgic encephalomyelitis.
Well, it sounds like something's happening to your brain.
True.
in a terrible way. Maybe it's your whole brain is growing. I don't know because I don't. It sounds like it's a medical term that nobody should have invented.
Right. Well, to me, it tells me they don't know what's going on. And to name something so easy, well, I'm not saying that fatigue is easy, but understanding the roots of fatigue should be quite easy. Why such a controversy? And why such a long name? It just tells me we're not striking at the roots. When things are simple, that's a major tenet in integrative health and hermetic health. Things have to be simple. If they're not simple, we're not understanding the disease or the factors that lead to health and disease. A little background. Turns out that 2.5 million people in the United States are said to be fatigued. We spend about $24 billion a year. These people do trying to find relief. Most of them, like I said at the beginning, get an antidepressant.
Oh, my God. That is amazing. That's an amazing amount of money.
Yeah. And now, the problem is that the few that get a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome are not treated properly. The ones that don't get a diagnosis are ostracized, deemed to be a bit crazy, and just being malingering, which is unfortunate because these people are truly fatigued. Now, an article just came out. And one of the issues, this month's issues, of the Journal of the American Medical Association that caught my attention. The title of the article is Advances in Understanding the Pathophysiology of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome. In other words, what the heck is going on? And if somebody wants to read it, it's in month of August, page 499. But this article is amazing. And I must say it recaps, it rehashes something we've known for quite a while, but it gets buried. And we talked about it about 2 years ago, I believe, because there was an article much like it back then in another journal. But this article boils down chronic fatigue to problems with the brain, as you caught on from the name.
Yeah.
They find that the brain has white matter lesions or little dots in the white matter, which are pathognomic of inflammation of the brain. The article finds that these people have impaired metabolism and that they have immune system changes. Now, Johnny, we've got the brain, metabolism, and the immune system. Now, you've been with me for number of years now. What does a hint of
brain-gut connection?
Exactly. Bingo. You got it. Because according to this article, the unifying model for fatigue is the microbiome. Roll the drums.
Okay. I don't have the sound effect board.
You're going to have to get it because
brum, brum, microbiome. Brum.
There you go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We've talked about this ad nauseum. And so here's finally an article pointing to the gut where we have a whole lot of signals generated that go to the brain, where our immune system is, most of it, where we metabolize energy. I mean, it should have been obvious to everyone that a source of fatigue is the food you're eating and how you metabolize it in the gut according to the gut bacteria you have. I mean, isn't that 2 + 2?
Well, yeah, the actual truth is that I'm a living product of this, the truth of it, because I can actually see when I start, because I'm still trying to get off my diet, but when I mean, get on to the right diet, the Dr. Rodier diet, I get tired. I start to sleep. I don't want to work out. I become like a sort of a zombie for hours at a time. And then when I get back on track, I get an enormous amount of energy. But it's really, really a shame. Because I haven't yet to completely control, you know, it the way that we know that it should be controlled. It just takes time for some people, and I'm one of those people.
Well, you know, the path to recovery is to first acknowledge where you're at. So self-awareness is a big step. So I congratulate you for having come to that point. Now, the rest of the work is downhill, and you should get it done. So turns out that we've known about this fatigue-gut connection, if you will, for decades. Here's another article that came out in the journal Psychoneuroendocrinology, which is a very integrative journal, integrating the brain, our psychology, and hormones. And we're going to talk about that and napping here in a minute. You kind of touched on that you get sleepy. But let's just put that on hold for a while to complete this discussion on fatigue. And so we've known that chronic fatigue has an overacting immune system for quite a while, which points to the gut. And the article in Psychoneuroimmunology in December 2017 was called Chronic Fatigue Could Be Triggered by an Overactive Immune System. Well, it doesn't surprise you, Johnny, because you've been reading about this and helping out with the show, hosting the show and all that. And so a great article in the JAMA 2004, page 852, talked about this. So it gives you an idea how long we've known about it. And the article is titled Small Intestinal Bacterial Overgrowth, which people know as SIBO.
Uh-huh. You're very serious.
Right. And people stop at that. Oh, okay. I got SIBO. That explains my irritable bowel. But they don't go further to realize that this overgrowth or a bacteria in the gut or a dysbiosis in the microbiome also is connected to fibromyalgia and fatigue. And now, well, we've outlined why you're not processing calories very well in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other big pillar of fatigue is related as well, and that's adrenal exhaustion. And what do you know about that, Johnny?
Well, I have an interesting story about that because I had a talk show many years ago in Palm Springs, and I had different authors a lot of times, and one wrote a book on adrenal exhaustion. And I sat there, we had sort of, this was called the Desert Business Hour, and we had different business people
who were my sponsors, participate in this. And so it was like a little forum, and there were five or six people there in the room. And I listened to, I started to interview the guy, and people in the room would ask questions. And then I said, oh my God, I have this. And what was happening to me, I'm quite sure what I'm happening to me now is related, but at that time, I sometimes slept for 3 hours a day, because I was forcing myself to do all the things that it required to do these shows. I did a number of shows myself, and I had all this preparation, and I gave myself, okay, I just got to get all this done. And, you know, I think a lot of people who are workaholics, like I was, experience fatigue, and it also drains them. So I think there are multiple causes of this.
Yes, but you hit it on the head. The main cause is people are overworked. And if they're not overworking, they're overwearing, which has the same effect on mm-hmm. our adrenal glands, which are the glands of stress. So whether the stress is psychological or physical, your adrenals get worn out. And before moving on with this topic, I must say that most doctors don't believe in adrenal exhaustion.
Oh, really?
Yes, which is very unfortunate, and I'll tell you why. Because adrenal function is very hard to test. And so the few tests we have come out pretty normal, unless you got outright Addison's or Cushing's disease, which is a total dysfunction of the adrenals. And then your body looks a certain way that you could tell someone with adrenal failure before they come in the door. They're that easy to spot. So doctors don't believe that there's any adrenal problem until you're Cushingoid or have Addison's disease.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
I mean, talk about reductionism. Talk about not understanding that diseases start at the cellular level in very incremental ways. And if our testing is not sensitive enough to pick it up, that adrenal dysfunction, early adrenal dysfunction, it therefore does not exist. That is a mentality, which is very unfortunate and laughable. But these docs are pretty adamant. In fact, they will call you a quack to your face if you ever say there is such a thing as adrenal exhaustion in the face of normal testing of the adrenals. It goes that far. You know, I had the same argument with doctors when 30 years ago I began to talk about pre-diabetes. And I got beat up like you wouldn't believe because... Well, they would tell me, Doc, there is no pre-diabetes. You either have it or not. You're pregnant or not. I couldn't believe that. It was in the journals back then. Now, PBS is exhorting or trying to get everyone out there to go be tested with an A1C to see if they're pre-diabetic, which is totally accepted now, the concept of pre-diabetes.
Well, you know, you always have been a pioneer. I have to interrupt this. I'm very interested in this, but we have to take a break and we'll be right back, okay?
All right.
Thanks. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. In addition to serving our freelance writing clients, we have a number of in-house proprietary products that we could use active investors to participate in. Active investors will get appropriate credit for their participation in writing, marketing, or assistance in producing. These projects are screenplays, TV pilots, and books, some susceptible for further in-house development as film and novel franchises or standalone film, novel, or television series. Many are in various stages of completion, but there are some in an idea stage. Money invested in these projects are for content development and marketing the screenplay, novel, or pilot to appropriate industry venues, including literary or talent agencies, production companies, television and movie studios. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
Now we're going to play a really sweet song by Lightstorm. In fact, it's called Sweet Dreamer. This is Johnny Bluestar. We're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show, and we've been discussing the term adrenal exhaustion and how it's kind of taboo among doctors nowadays. Why is that again?
Well, because testing for adrenal function is not that great. So the testing we have right now does not pick up subtleties or slight dysfunction of the adrenals until the adrenals are failing, which we call Addison's and Cushing's disease.
Right.
And so it shows the mentality that if we can't test it, then it doesn't exist, which is not only unscientific, but childish, in my opinion. So this is in the context of chronic fatigue syndrome. So to review, we have two big pillars of fatigue, adrenal exhaustion and the microbiome imbalance, which is mostly a dietary problem, right?
Yeah.
Well, turns out the adrenals are not going to recover. Think of them as being frazzled or worn out. Well, they need to restore themselves, refurbish themselves, right? Mm-hmm. If they're constantly firing because you're under constant pressure, under constant stress, either psychological or physical, working too hard or worrying too much or being beat up emotionally, well, the adrenals have to recover. But if you're always under the gun, they're not going to. And they're not going to if you're not absorbing or processing micronutrients like minerals well in the diet, particularly if you're taking drugs like Prilosex, you know, those acid blockers, that curtail the absorption of micronutrients like minerals, which are essential for adrenal function. So you will not be able to process those nutrients in the gut real well if you have a microbiome imbalance. Then the adrenals will have a harder time recovering. Do you follow?
Yeah.
Okay. So these things are connected. Unfortunately, when you go to a regular doctor, they check your blood. They might check the adrenals. I doubt it. And finding everything normal, because this kind of disease, fatigue, often doesn't show anything because things are happening at the cellular level. So the patient feels it, perhaps too early, if you will, for tests to pick up. So these poor patients end up with an antidepressant or, in subtle ways, ostracized or sent packing from those practices. And so they tend to go to other doctors that might not be as reputable. Some, I'm afraid to say, some practitioners who will start to give a whole lot of supplements and hormones. A whole lot of these people are treated with hormones. Why? Even though the testing might be normal, but these other practitioners have special tests, quote unquote, where they will show that your thyroid and your sex hormones are down. Well, it's their tests, and everybody tests positive. What does that tell you about a test where everybody's testing positive, John?
It tells me that maybe it's unintentional to some degree, but it basically is a kind of fraud. You know,
exactly.
In other words, they're over-testing, and they're finding all these problems with hormones, which everybody has anyway, and they're labeling it as a bad thing, and then they're getting some money for treating them.
Exactly.
And I think that kind of rationalization occurs a lot in different fields, but for us, it's very obvious that a lot of this is occurring in the medical field.
Yes, and the paramedical field too, meaning non-doctors, other health practitioners. So these poor patients end up on a lot of hormones, sex hormones and thyroid, which are stimulants. So they will have a spring in their step for a year or two. But guess what happens after a year or two?
They begin to lose the spring.
Exactly. And now they have two problems. The fatigue comes back and they got unnecessary hormones on board. Mm-hmm. So we have to really educate people about fatigue, because a whole lot of them end up harmed either by an antidepressant, by hormones, or just sheer neglect where they don't get proper treatment.
Well, you know, I wanted to mention, I think this is important because this is the Integrative Hermetic Health Show. Let's talk a little bit about the spirituality, so to speak, underlying what these doctors are doing, and not only what doctors are doing, what politicians are doing, what corporate leaders are doing. They're basically asleep to their inner voice inside of them. I'm reading something, a book by W.W. Bartley, who's deceased right now, called Werner Erhard, The Transformation of a Man, The Founding of Est. This is an extraordinary biography, and for many reasons. But one of the things that caught me, because I actually tried to, I wanted to write a biopic based on this book, and I contacted Werner Erhard, and he said he wasn't ready for it. He offered me a discount for S, which I couldn't afford anyway. But anyway, the thing that got me is one of his primary concepts, which is the difference between mind and what he calls between mind and self. And mind is sort of like it's what we might call a lower nature. It's this where you have a lot of organized information, and it's sort of like flashcards, and you bring them out and you follow the flashcard rules, and you forget who gave you the flashcard in the first place. So it's a sort of a mechanical, asleep type of thing. And then you have the experience of self, which is beyond just the normal personality, which is playing with these flashcards. And you're actually thinking in a higher way, and in a very good way, in a very positive way. And he believed that we needed to transform our consciousness from mind and turn it into self. And I think our whole, most of people in this world, and particularly I know in the United States, where people are hearing the most amazing contradictions and problems from government, and particularly about health, from the pharmaceutical industry, and they just ignore it because they're sort of programmed to take these things by virtue of their authority.
Yes, I've heard the same concept from other authors like Balsekar, call this thinking mind and working mind. And it goes to the concept that you allude to. And it's unfortunate because a whole lot of people confuse the two, and they start to believe that their ingrained ideas are really them, when they're really not. They're just programming.
Mm-hmm.
And so to dig past that concept and find our true selves is the work of a lifetime, which I'm sad to say most people are not able to achieve. And I would say the jury is out on myself, but I humbly recognize that there is such division. And so your point, I believe, is that you're saying that a whole lot of doctors are not able to break through this distinction and get caught up in ideologies that don't allow for further light and truth, if you will, if it's out there, because they're so locked into their thinking patterns, their ideologies. And in other words, they cannot overcome the programming that they are under because of profession or upbringing or whatever it is. Again, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, because this is one of the central tenets of integrative health, to be open to putting everything together. So if you're leaving parts of the puzzle out, you'll never have a true picture. So thanks for sharing.
Well, I want to go on a little bit further, because for instance, in the Uspensky-Gurdjieff system, they talk about sleeping, which is the ordinary state of consciousness, and waking up. In the New Testament, they talk about the soul, which is sort of the personality, and the spirit, which is what we're talking about here, is the self. I think it's a continual use of these different terms. There are so many of these different terms that really are the same thing that it does get very confusing. But I just want to say this one thing, which I think you might agree with, is that the beginning of the change in people needs to be sort of conscious. And it usually is, I want the truth about everything. I don't want to just go ahead and believe all this crap. To the best of my ability, I want to seek the truth. And you seek the truth, and the truth will set you free. And I believe that the universe and the consciousness behind the universe can hear that. And that's when this spiritual path begins. Because it's not just a simple, oh, I believe this. It's a process of perfecting your understanding of yourself and the world. And you go into a different place than you are when you're constrained by this mind level.
Yes, I agree. I agree. In fact, we've alluded to this before when we talked about know thyself, what the Greeks had on the thresholds of their temples.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about. Who are you? Who is God? Know thyself, and that's the beginning of knowledge. But you don't get up to the temple unless you want to go up there, unless you are a seeker of truth. And so, yeah, it begins with a volition, with a decision to look for truth. Absolutely. I must say, though, that at some point comes surrender or acceptance that you're never going to find it. As you can dig and dig and dig, and it finally comes to you as a gift from God, if you will, mm-hmm. from grace. And so, you know, I have a lot of respect for seekers. I must say that even though I appear to be a seeker, because I'm always reading and looking at these journals, as you know, we talked about it, I could take it or leave it, because I'm done seeking. I'm waiting for grace to touch me. And if it doesn't happen, that's fine. I'm okay.
I will say this. I like to say consciousness is a two-way street. And my opinion about it is that the path towards enlightenment at some point is sort of like a self-help kit. You get the kit, and there are certain techniques and things that you can do to reach out. But then whatever you're doing is intervened by this higher force, which takes you to the next step. So
exactly.
you master these steps, step one
yep,
by one.
Yep. Exactly. Well, it's like kindergarten, grade school, high school, baby steps, you know. But thanks for sharing. I totally agree. Do we have time to start a new topic? Or
Yeah, we're going to take a break now.
Okay.
Thanks.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio,
musical scores for advertising, television or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Dr. Hugo Rodier has published 4 books on health issues covering practically all chronic health problems. You may find them by accessing his website at hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. Gut health is the most academic, while switching off chronic disease is the most patient-oriented, with simple recipes to implement his nutritional protocols. Now here's UK's singer-songwriter, incredible artist, Stephanie Slevin, singing What Goes Around.
They say what goes around comes right back around, but that's not true for me. They say what goes around comes right back around, and that it comes in threes. Please bring me rest, bring me some peace. Please knock on my door. Close your eyes, embrace me, feel tomorrow's end of.
We're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Hugo Rodier, and we've been discussing a lot of things. The last kind of technical discussion we had was about the term adrenal exhaustion, but now we're going to move to another area of review of these articles. What's the next subject?
Well, we sort of touched about it on the last sections. We talked about excessive sleep, that we cannot wake up, we don't have good sleeping patterns, so we don't feel refreshed. I must say, before tackling this, that the way to fix chronic fatigue should be obvious to our listeners. One is improve your diet, your microbiome, get proper rest, and help your adrenals with some supplements like herbs like ashwagandha, rhodiola, ginseng. So there's more to that, which requires a consultation with an integrative doctor. But this concept of sleeping, I love it. You alluded to it twice. Uh-huh. Because you also said that our true selves is when we're asleep. Is it very true?
No, our true selves are when we are. I'm talking about this tradition. Our true selves are when we are awake in consciousness, as opposed to being asleep in our ordinary consciousness when we're not aware of spirit or self.
Okay, sure, true enough.
Okay,
I agree. But the inverse is also true. That our true selves is when we're dreaming. That's a true reality, if you will, and being awake is sort of like a dream, if you get my drift.
No, I do. I see what you mean.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about an article that kind of touches on this and a whole lot of confusion. But this article came out in the journal Alzheimer's and Dementia this month. And the title of the article is Excessive Napping May Be Early Warning Signs of Alzheimer's Disease, which I find ludicrous.
I'm sorry, because I got worried because I just yawned.
Okay, I mean, it's just amazing. In fact, it reminds me of being put on hold by this conglomerate, this medical conglomerate. I'm not going to mention any names, but it's very big here locally in Utah.
Okay.
And the recording said, avoid napping.
Oh, God, that is so stupid. What would have happened in World War II if Winston Churchill wasn't taking his daily nap at noon?
What would have happened if Napoleon had not napped? Yeah. All right. But they do find a link between excessive napping and Alzheimer's disease. It is there. I acknowledge it. It is published. It's a good article. But it's misguided. Totally 100% misguided. Now, I must admit that I'm a Latin. I grew up French and Spanish, napping, and I still nap, and I get pretty grouchy if I don't nap, all right?
So all these siestas are a sign of Alzheimer's in these different Latin American, South American countries?
This is totally, totally wrong. Let me explain. Is there a link between napping and Alzheimer's disease? Yes, but they're not digging deep enough, not that corporate with their stupid recording, nor this article. Now, on the positive side, yes, if you're napping because you're eating too much sugar, that's the common denominator. It turns out that when you eat a lot of sugar, you put out a lot of insulin, and that extra insulin is a neurotransmitter, has a neurotransmitter effect, a sedating neurotransmitter effect that puts you to sleep. So if you're napping because you ate a whole lot of enchiladas and beans and rice, and Twinkies and candy bars and ice cream, yes, your napping is driven by excessive insulin, which has been linked to Alzheimer's. In fact, we now call type 3 diabetes to this process where insulin is excessively poured out of the system and affects your brain. Remember I talked about the journal Psychoneuroendocrinology? Okay, we now know that all the functions of a human body, we've always known, that all the functions of the human body are related. It turns out that the most powerful neurotransmitter in the brain is insulin, a hormone.
Really?
Yes, and that's what I'm talking about. Type 3 diabetes is Alzheimer's disease, or the one of the factors that leads to Alzheimer's disease. That is one of the reasons we got so much Alzheimer's in our country, because our country, our people, Americans, are addicted to sugar. I wrote a book about this. So is there a link between napping and Alzheimer's disease? Absolutely, yes.
Well, I definitely have proven to myself that when I eat something with a lot of sugar, boom, I'm done. I go to sleep.
Exactly why I said that you alluded to it on our earlier segment of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. you're living proof of it, okay? And that leads to fatigue, because the sleep you're getting is not restorative. It's sort of a sedative drug-induced sleep, if you will. And so that kind of napping is absolutely linked to Alzheimer's, yes. But we're demonizing napping, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because if you nap after a very light lunch, like a salad, and you nap because you allow your body's rhythm, biorhythms to slow down. We all slow down in the early afternoon. That's a biological fact. And people, cultures that understand this and allow the body to rest for a little bit in the middle of the day, not only guard themselves excessive heat during the summer, they get to relax more. They obey their body signals. Their evenings are more full of pleasure and energy, which can be channeled into entertainment, sex, or whatever you want, instead of dragging your feet all night and falling asleep on the couch watching some TV show or anything else. And so, on the one hand, I'm saying, again, the article is correct, but it's unnecessarily demonizing napping. So we got two kinds of napping: the napping induced by bad food, processed sugars that increase insulin levels, which have been linked to Alzheimer's, and the healthy napping that I believe I engage in my culture, my people have engaged in for millennia. And you tell me, who are the healthiest people on earth? The French and the Japanese, both of which nap. Thank you very much.
Very interesting. I mean, I want to say something, though, because I may be giving the impression that I'm always having sugar.
Well,
and I want to say that because
are
I am, well, no, I'm not,
okay.
Because I'm striving towards the Rodier diet, which is sort of like a Mediterranean diet. It's sort of like Dr. Joel Fuhrman's diet in a way. I guess you're familiar with him too, right? So it's emphasizing vegetables and some fruit and some protein from vegetables, but also a little bit from meat, but not too much in my case. And when I do that and I combine that with exercise and not staying up all night watching some kind of program, then I feel great. I feel great, and I have felt better in the last couple of years when I'm doing the right thing than I ever did in my 20s or my 30s or my, well, whatever. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for clarifying. So hopefully listeners can tell that we're not perfect people. We're just one of many out there who try to do the right thing, and together we might motivate each other to living a healthier lifestyle.
And I also agree with something else that you said, and that I found a very interesting YouTube on what this person was calling the detox and the retox. And he was suggesting that you go on a core diet, sort of like maybe the Mediterranean diet, but your healthiest diet for maybe 3 weeks. You make a commitment to that, and then you just pig out. Listen to this one. You pig out on anything you want to eat for a day. Totally. You can eat anything. And then you probably get sick. but then that sort of validates the value of your diet, and it's easier to go back.
That's absolutely what I tell patients when they come in feeling bad about falling off the wagon. And of course, you know, my job is to teach, to motivate. So I don't want anybody feeling, oh my gosh, I'm a failure. I'll just roll over and die. No, I say, I'm glad you fell off the wagon. I'm glad you had a lapse because how did you feel? Terrible. Well, that proves a point, doesn't it? Which is exactly what you said.
Yeah. And another thing, though, that yesterday I intentionally went to Sizzler. And I did want to be with my wife and everything, but I went there because I was going to just have the salad. Well, I wound up having two potatoes. I had ice cream. God forgive me, I even had some M&Ms things that look like M&Ms. And I ate several rolls with butter, and I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop, and I'm saying, what the hell did I do now? But one thing I have gotten, if this happens during any time, I make sure that I don't feel guilty about it. I don't go into the...
I lost you there.
I make sure that I don't feel guilty about it. In other words, I don't get absorbed by guilt and start condemning myself. I just pick up and get back on the trail of good food.
Well, good, good. You know, it proves you're human. And I'm sure that you'll master those lapses in the future and keep trying. I mean,
but I think it's bad to feel guilty. You know, it's like what you said. There is a role for comfort food. There is a role for enjoyable chocolate and so forth once in a while anyway. But it's really bad when you start to get so contorted by guilt, which I have in the past.
Yeah, no, that's no good. In fact, there's an article out there. I'll have to look it up in the journal Lancet about 30 years ago that really caught my attention. That's why I remember. But the article says that people who eat candy twice a month live longer. Now, it has nothing to do with the candy. It has everything to do with the guilt that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, and we've covered this before, that if you allow yourself to have a blowout day or eat candy twice a month, if you have issues programming in your brain that causes you to be more have an addicting personality, you won't stop at 2 days a month. You won't stop at 1 day. Pretty soon it'll be twice a week, and then twice a day. And so I tell people, look, if you ever see me at a movie munching on Milk Duds, don't be surprised, because I don't have an addicting personality. I look good. You know, I'm not obese at all. I'm 66. I look 66, but a healthy 66. But the point being that I don't feel bad about eating those Milk Duds at a movie once a month. Okay? Does that make sense? So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely makes sense.
Okay. If anybody's really rigid about it, say you're some granola type eating carrots in a corner alone, I'm sorry, you're not going to live very long. We talked about that study that came out about Roseto, Pennsylvania. Remember that?
Yeah. The Italian community? Is that the one?
Yeah, the Italian community in Pennsylvania who lived longer because they were so cohesive and loved each other and knew each other. They ate a very typical Italian fare, you know, lots of meat, lots of spaghetti meatballa. I think people can easily understand this. Hopefully they won't take it as an excuse to pig out.
Well, you know, there's something else that you've talked about, and I think it's directly related. It has to do with the presence of these bad bacteria in the microbiome. If kept in check, they do provide a certain testing of the immune system. In other words, that it's probably good that it's there, because it does bring the immune system into play and kind of strengthens it because they're fighting something.
True.
So
also we've talked about how the microbiome, you get the bad guys in the microbiome to use the sugar. So if you're not eating that sugar, they will send you signals from the brain to the gut to feed them in the style they've become accustomed to.
Right.
So a whole lot of sugar cravings is because we carry bacteria that got used to a very processed diet full of sugar.
Well, listen, I have to say, and sadly, that we do have to go. And again, I have to say for myself, over the period of time that we've been giving this program, a lot of my attitudes have changed. A lot of my habits have changed. I'm still there, struggling in certain ways, but I feel a lot more optimistic.
Well, thank you, Johnny. I hope our listeners can say the same thing.
Well, you take care until next week, and we'll see you then.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And now we're going to say goodbye, and after a few messages, we will go out with the Palm Springs Lullaby, sung by Patricia Welch. I wrote the lyrics, and Edgar Ahrens composed the music.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.
The Coalition is a unique project designed to empower its members both individually and collectively. Besides individual empowerment, its broader focus is on the restoration, protection, and enhancement of citizen and human rights throughout the world through the aid of its members. As this project is centered in the United States, our first task is to create a website and social network infrastructure to promote collective efforts to take back our rightful control as citizens over our government as designed by our founding fathers. Although we must begin with the social network restricted to United States citizens, the organization will also host a global dialogue for the discussion of human rights by citizens of democratic nations throughout the world. If you're interested, please check us out in the GoFundMe.com website, entering in the search field, The Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. That is go to
GoFundMe.com and enter in the search field, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment.
Escaping from the dawn, we flee to desert skies. The final dance is on, with no more alibis. As windmills madly spin, our dreams from lovesick sighs, the dancing shadows.
Change. desert, Shangri-La.